This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.
A woman may read a Game of Thrones.
A woman may start a podcast.
Two women may host Podcasters Landing, the show devoted to the entire A Song of Ice and Fire series.
Two women may cover three chapters each week, followed by history and friendship lessons.
A listener may sit and tune in.
A woman may use adult language.
A woman may reveal spoilers.
A listener may support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sophia Mayer Studios, all under case.
A woman welcomes a listener to Podcaster's Landing.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Nat.
And today we are covering A Game of Thrones, Sansa, Eddard, and Catelyn. In these chapters, again, I don't know how much I can judge Sansa because Joffrey said he'll grant mercy, but I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, as always, she is just putting him on a pedestal, idolizing him, seeing things that she wants to see and not, you know, the person that he is. But I guess he didn't really show her who he is. We're speaking basically from the point of a person who knows what is going to happen and the kind of creature that he is. I didn't find her horribly annoying.
No, I didn't. And Ned is kicking himself in the dungeons. And it's like, good, he's finally blaming himself.
Yeah. He's finally realized that he has done some pretty crappy things.
And then Catelyn negotiates with the Freys, one of the most intelligent things she's done in this series.
100%.
So, but first, we begin with Sansa. So Sansa in this chapter, she is in the throne room about to, you know, beseech her lord, the King Joffrey, to grant mercy to her father. But before that, you know, she's just sitting and, you know, and King Joffrey is, you know, holding court.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I noticed was, you know, all the titles and everything. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I just honed in on Cersei's like title, like Light of the West, and I'm like, is that a is that a title that's typically given to, you know, a lady of Casterly Rock, or is that something she made up?
I honestly don't know. It sounds to me like she made it up. I don't think that the women have titles apart from just queen or princess or something like that, or lady.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, I don't think they have titles like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's just
she's ridiculous. What a ridiculous person she is sometimes.
Yeah. But also I was honing in, like, before we get all those crazy introductions, there's also, like, Sansa is also, like, kind of contemplating, like, all the gates are, like, guarded. Like, so a part of her, despite her deluded mindset right now, is still, like, kind of sort of thinking about how could I escape if I wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't want to, but she's like, I don't have a choice really but to stay here because everything is guarded. But she's like, I don't want to leave anyway. It suits me to go and pick flowers with Marcella and go
and again,
pray.
I think that's a sort of, again, defense of, again, it's a sort of Stockholm syndrome of being you're okay with this because that's better than thinking I have no agency in this situation.
That's the thing. I think that she is sort of conveying beautiful things to being good. So, you know, Joffrey being handsome, apparently he is, and Cersei being beautiful and a queen, and she is relating all of that to not that this is good. Like, this is not, I mean, all of this is not bad. That's what I meant. And the fact that, you know, right in the beginning, it says, Sansa hovered by the door for once unguarded. The queen had given her freedom of the castle as reward for being good. Yet even so, she was to be escorted. She was escorted everywhere she went. Honor guards for my daughter to be, the queen called them. But it did not make Sansa feel honored. Mm-hmm. So it does sound, you know, it does sound like she knows that there's something up, but she is not really questioning it because...
Yeah, like, she is slowly in her evolution starting to realize that, you know, things are not all as they seem, even though, like, she's still got a lot of delusional defense mechanisms in place.
Yeah.
And so, who is it?
Pisa, you know what else I found it as well, right in the beginning of this chapter, is that she is so willing to give up, like, her family and her roots, because it's saying here that, you know, she prays in the Sept for her father, but that's not the gods that she was raised with. She was raised in the old gods, and, you know, and then she says that sometimes she prayed in the gods' wood as well, since the Starks kept the old gods. Not like since our family kept the old gods. It was like since the Starks. So mm-hmm. she's so just like willing to give up her identity. She's
and it just makes me think of, like, is this just purely, like, a universal, the grass is always greener to, like, a young child, or, like, something more deeper where Sansa, in her childish mindset, does have a reason to be a little resentful of, you know, where she grew up, and it just, like, you know, it works for someone like Arya, but it doesn't work for someplace like me.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I think she is, because she is betrothed to Joffrey, so she is, I guess she is taking that, you know, shedding her previous identity to join into the family. But, you know, her mom didn't. Mm-hmm. Her mom still had a sept to pray. So, yeah, it's just very interesting.
Yep. And then, so they're, you know, the small council is calling everyone to come to King's Landing to pledge fealty to King Joffrey, and, you know, listing all the High Lords, anyone who is important. But Sansa notes that they're asking Arya to come. Mm-hmm. And so from that, Sansa is smart enough to realize that Arya escaped.
Yeah, yeah. That's what she thinks, anyway, that she's safe up the north. Yeah. She doesn't ask many questions about her.
Mm-hmm. And then, in the place of the traitor Eddard Stark, Tywin Lannister, Lord of Casterly Rock, and Warden of the West, will take the office as Hand of the King.
Mm-hmm.
In the place of traitor Stannis Baratheon, it is the wish of His Grace that his Lady Mother, the Queen Regent Cersei Lannister, who has ever been his staunchest supporter, be seated upon his small council that she may help him rule wisely and with justice. So the king has decreed. The small council consents. And I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. obviously we know Cersei is a shitty ruler and a shitty person, but I'm just wondering how unprecedented it is for Joffrey to be officially giving Cersei a seat at the small council in this way.
Yeah, I read it more in a way that people were surprised because she's a woman, and not in fact that, you know, she might be manipulating the situation, or she's like family, because Stannis was in the small council and he was Robert's brother. I just think that people were surprised because it is a woman on the council.
Yeah, because no one gave a two shits that Tywin Lannister, the king's grandfather, is now the Hand of the King, so.
Yeah, exactly. No one said anything, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, also wish of His Grace that his lord servant Janos Slynt, commander of the City Watch, be raised to the rank of lord and granted the ancestral seat of Harrenhal. Well, we know how that will turn out, but yeah. So, and everyone is really grumbling about this because Slynt is kind of quote unquote the nouveau riche, and so all like some older mm-hmm. houses are kind of pissed off that they're be given this super fancy schmancy like Harrenhal, even though Harrenhal sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like everyone knows it's haunted, but yeah, it's just the principle of you give Harrenhal exactly. to someone.
Yeah, it's just the principle. No one wants it, but it shouldn't go to someone who is a commoner.
Yeah, well, it's like Algeria with the Western Sahara. Algeria doesn't really care about the Western Sahara. They just don't want Morocco to have it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So petty.
It's so sad that so many geopolitics can be reduced to basically countries acting like high school mean girls.
Yeah, yeah. Just very childish, very petty, like grow up people.
Yep. So we've got that. And then what I honed in on is the sacking of Sir Barristan Selmy. Very sad.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And again, also unprecedented that because these, you know, paladins, these members of this holy military order, like they take their vows for life. Like they're like the Pope. They don't retire. They just die.
Yeah, I do feel that has, I guess that these were set up as at the same time as the Night's Watch because they have the same rules. I shall take no wife, no land. Protector of the realm, but they protect the king. So, you know, the Night's Watch is supposed to protect the land, and the Lord
Kingsguard.
Kingsguard, yeah, not Lord Commander, but the Kingsguard is supposed to protect the king. So, and there's like the contrast between, you know, the black clothes and the white clothes as well, which is
Oh yeah, this is true. I hadn't really thought about it in that level of detail. But yeah. I guess what I find interesting with Sir Barristan being fired is, again, also unprecedented. And, you know, Tywin will go on later to say that, you know, getting rid of Selmy was unnecessary and stupid. So I wonder how much of this is, like, Cersei's idea and how much of this is just dumb Joffrey. Because I like to think Cersei is a little smarter than that to realize that just because... It's like you have the young members of the Kingsguard to be like the brawn and the muscle and to be swift and agile, but then you rely on the older members for wisdom and strategy and military tactics. And yeah, so getting rid of all. So I'm kind of in my head canon is this is just Joffrey, you know, doing whatever he wants and having no concept, and Cersei's letting him just do whatever because he wanted the Hound to be a Kingsguard.
I don't know. I think she brought up the idea of getting rid of Barristan Selmy because she wants him surrounded by family. Well, her side of the family, that is the Lannisters. And Barristan Selmy has been there, you know, through all the other kings.
Yeah, and also the sense that Selmy was willing to give credence and legitimacy to Robert's letter instead of just going along, not immediately being like, yes, Lady Cersei, yes, your majesty. Yeah. So I think just him like even questioning just a little.
Yeah.
You know, so I think how things happened, her being like, oh, he's gotta go.
Yeah. I think that Joffrey is not there on the mentality yet to think about, oh, he's too old and he needs to be replaced by younger people. I think that it's literally Cersei just sort of manipulating the situation. But then she also said to him, you know, you can choose whoever you want to be on the Kingsguard because there'll be a spot left. And he said, oh, yeah, okay, so I'll have the Hound in there, which makes sense. And to be honest, I don't want to be that kind of person, but I do agree with Cersei. where she says, you know, because he says, I served King Aerys, his father Jaehaerys, and Robert, and then, you know, Littlefinger points out and says, you know, all of them dead. And, I mean, he's not wrong. And she's not wrong to sort of get rid of him. But, you know, at the end of the day, you couldn't really get rid of someone who has an oath for life. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I guess it's just we judge Cersei's decision based on, like, if Selmy were to stay, how could he be... If he could have been persuaded to, like, conspire, maybe, instead of Sansa getting stupid Ser Dantos later, that it was Selmy who was actually helping Sansa try to escape.
Yeah, that would have been good, but I think he's too filled with honor for his job. Honor. I don't know.
Oh my god, I want the buddy adventure of Barristan Selmy and Sansa Stark going to Essos and joining up with Dany. That's what I want.
That would have been good.
But anyway, and Selmy is like, fuck this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I am a knight. I will die a knight. And Littlefinger's just like a naked knight. And it's just, yeah. Sir Barristan is like, you can't fire me. I quit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just so humiliating, isn't it? Because, yeah, Barristan Selmy is basically like taking off his armor, taking off his cloak, taking off his sword. He's just going to walk out of there, basically.
Yeah. And literally says, throws the sword at Joffrey's feet and is like, here, melt it down and put it with the others on that stupid throne. Fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, yeah. He says, melt it down and add to the others if you like. It would do you more good than the swords in the hands of these five, which is the rest of the King's Guard. Perhaps Lord Stannis will chance to sit on it when he takes your throne.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, because Selmy is smart enough to be like, this is going to collapse, like, sooner or later.
Yeah, and that's what Joffrey really fixates on. He says, you know, he called me boy, and he talked about my Uncle Stannis. I want him seized and questioned. I want him seized! That's how he sounds like to me.
Yeah, whatever happened to Jack Gleeson? Like, what did he end up doing if not acting?
Nothing.
Or is he just living off his Game of Thrones money?
I think he stopped acting. As far as I know, he stopped acting because he got so much hate from playing Joffrey.
He got so much hate?
Yeah.
But that's the point. He was so good at it.
Yeah.
That's like, did Tom Felton get so much shit for being Draco?
I mean, but he didn't, like... He didn't do the horrible things, you know? But at the end of the day, it's funny because, you know, the guy who played Ramsay Bolton, he's still around. He's still doing stuff.
Yeah.
I guess some people can do it and some people can't. I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong. I don't know if that's true. But all I know is that either he took a break from acting or he stopped acting altogether because the hate that he got.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so Selmy leaves and Joffrey immediately appoints Sandor Clegane.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why not? I have no lands nor wife to forsake and would have cared if I did. But I warn you, I'll say no knight's vows.
Yeah, because he has that thing against being a knight because his brother was knighted. And he's just like, that is just so crooked because his brother is a monster.
Yeah, which, again, I admire... You know, Sandor Clegane is shitty in a lot of ways, but I do admire his, like, sticking point of, like, showing that this specific institution of knighthood is bullshit and I'm not doing it.
Yeah. I mean, he has to do it, I guess. He's just like, until he can't take it anymore, of course.
Yeah, well, like, not joining the Kingsguard, but he specifically is like, I'm not being knighted.
Yeah.
Even if I do this.
Yeah.
Yep. And then finally, all that other business is concluded, and then we get Sansa... Mm-hmm. coming in and she's like, I must be strong as my lady mother.
Oh, please.
And like just smiling at her, like again, the desperation of clinging to straws when you want something so desperately to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like, you know, he's smiling at her and she's just says, he does love me. Oh, mm-hmm. Your child, you poor child.
Yeah, and then what we didn't really note make note of beforehand is Sansa's realizing, you know, guilty by association being Ned Stark's daughter, like everyone's avoiding her like the plague.
Yeah, I think that's what I was wondering. Is it because of Ned or is it because of the war that is brewing? Because
I think both are connected, so you can't really separate one from the other at this point.
I think just because she is a Stark, even though she's kind of like trying to shed it.
Mm-hmm.
She, at the end of the day, she is a Stark. She can't run away from it.
And it's just funny of her trying to shed this because it's not like even it's in a more modern society where you can kind of sort of shed your identity in that way. This is such a Stark, no pun intended, a Stark as in very black and white medieval society where you come from is everything. And so you're never, even if you want to or have a good reason to, you're never going to get over the fact that you come from a certain family.
Yeah. Yeah, unless, you know, sorry, Alexa.
Stop.
Anyway, yeah.
Does Alexa have any insights into Sansa Stark at this time?
No, don't ask her. yeah, what I was going to say is unless it's Arya, who is just not, people don't really pay attention, you can't really shed that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Sansa is begging for mercy for her father. And, you know, Sansa's in a position where she's trying to play it as clearly her father must have been lied to, and therefore what he did, he was acting on information, misinformation that was false, whether it was planted by Stannis or Renly or someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Which in a way is a smart thing to do, to, like, you know, because she knows she's not in a position to directly, like, deny that, no, my father didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, yeah. She is paying attention on what's happening, on the conversations that are being held as well, to be able to turn around and say, yeah, he must have been, like, told lies by Stannis or Renly. Mm-hmm. You know, she's being quite smart then.
Yeah. Which, and again, to be fair to Sansa, like, it, if anything, like, I think for two podcasters, I think Natasha and Rashawn on Some Spoiled for their reboot of Game of Thrones, like, they made a point of, I think Rashawn said something to the effect of, like, if Sansa had been in Arya's position, even if she had escaped the Red Keep, she just would have been dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if Arya had been the one to stay in the Red Keep, and, like, she would not be able to play this sort of polite, you know, maneuvering, and she would also be dead.
Yeah. Yeah. They end up exactly where they need to be, even though Sansa does suffer quite a lot.
As horrible as the situation is, both of them are end up in positions where at the very least they can survive.
Yeah, yeah.
So Sansa is like, please, you know, grant mercy, like, he will, you know, and King Joffrey is like, your words have moved me. I will grant mercy if he confesses his crimes.
Mm-hmm. What is funny is that he, you know, first he asks his mum, he's like, mother, what should I do? Mm-hmm. And then he takes the lead from her.
Yeah, mama's boy.
Yeah.
Although in things moving forward, I wish he would always say, mom, what should I do? Because then Ned Stark would not have lost his head, because not even Cersei wanted that, at least not immediately.
No, she knew that he would be more valuable, as Varys says later on. Yep. That even she knows that a tame wolf is better than a dead one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and thus we move from Sansa to Ned. The straw on the floor stank of urine.
Mm.
That's a lovely image. Lovely. And it just made me think of going fast forward into Feast of Crows when Cersei is held captive because of the crazy...
High Sparrow.
The High Sparrow, yeah. The crazy denomination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, she gets, you know, it's karma. Comes back around, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then, and finally... Ned is looking, he's like, oh, Robert, and he's like, oh, such a fool I was. And it's like, okay, he finally gets it. It took him being thrown into a dungeon.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I think there is something to be said, like, just like Sansa, not even killing Lady was enough to, you know, alert Sansa that these are not nice people.
Yeah.
Likewise, Ned, until he himself is thrown in a dungeon with his daughter's lives in the balance, not even he could interpret the killing of Lady appropriately. Mm-hmm. That this is complete crap and we're going home.
Yeah, you know, from the beginning he already knew that something was bad, but he you know, he couldn't say no because of honor or whatever.
And it's just, and there is, you know, just thinks of the level of sexism, because again, in a lot of ways Sansa and Ned are very, very similar. They're just masculine and feminine forms of the same sort of naivete, and people shit on Ned, but at the same time we appreciate the honorableness of him, whereas because Sansa's a girl, we totally shit even more on her for her naivete.
I think some of that is just complete sexism. Yeah, it is that thing where women are ridiculed by, you know, X, Y, and Z, that men would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
you know, she know. But the thing with Sansa as well, not right now, but she will learn soon enough that, you know, she is learning to play the game, mm-hmm. which Ned in his, like, 35 years has never done that.
Yeah. So, yeah, fool, thrice damned blind fool. And Cersei Lannister's face seemed to float before him. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
Mm-hmm. And what is funny is that, you know, he is also blaming, you know, he's saying fool about himself, but he's also blaming Renly. And it's like, it's not Renly's fault. You said no to his help. He offered you help and you said no.
Like,
so
he, Renly offered the same, like, you know, he found it distasteful, even he did it, but he found it distasteful to ask, you know, Littlefinger to pay off, like, the City Watch or whatever, you know, to make sure they were on, quote-unquote, their side. Like, the what Renly offered was no different or no better or worse than what he eventually asks of Littlefinger.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only thing is that, again, the same thing with, like, the way people shit on Jaime as the Kingslayer. It's like, other people can maybe, like, you know, move against the king, but because of your specific position, you can't, even though the mm-hmm. king may be wrong or stupid or corrupt or whatever. So yeah. It's like, you know, Littlefinger, as this faithless person, he's allowed to move against the king, and I can use Littlefinger to mm-hmm. be underhanded, but you are the king's brother, and you're not, and you're supposed to be loyal to him. So even though this is the best move, you're not supposed to be doing it the way that, even though everyone wanted Aerys dead, everyone shits on Jaime because Jaime killed him.
Yeah, exactly. It's double-edged sword, isn't it?
Well, it's just, again, I'm totally in the school of thought with Varys is, like, who, like, regardless of connections or what your technical duty was, if the person is a piece of shit, you are entitled to move against them.
Yeah, for sure. I think so, too.
Yeah. Anyway, so we get a lot of flashbacks, and Ned is kind of reminiscing of with Robert,
mm-hmm.
and he kind of hallucinates Robert being like, you stick-necked fool, too proud to listen. Can you eat pride, Stark? Will honor shield your children? And mm-hmm. so we get all sorts of that. And then we also get the flashback of the big tourney. Was it at the Eyrie or where was it? I forget where. The big jousting, tourney.
Was it Harrenhal?
Yeah, it was at Harrenhal, yeah. Where it was there. Like, Istor honed in on, you know, it was at that tourney that Jaime Lannister was appointed into the Kingsguard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of that happened in the same tourney. This was, yeah. It was an eventful one.
Yeah. So Jaime's gets put in the Kingsguard, and that's the famous thing where Rhaegar wins the joust and gives the big crown of winter roses, just totally passes his wife and gives it to Lyanna.
Mm-hmm. You know what I notice here, and I think that is a big hint that we are heading towards R plus L.
Yeah,
because it says here, right? So Ned, this is the quote from the book. Ned remembered the moment when all smiles died, when Prince Rhaegar Targaryen urged his horse past his own wife, the Dornish Princess Elia Martell, to lay the Queen of Beauty's laurel in Lyanna's lap. He could see it still, a crown of winter roses. Ned reached out his hand to grasp the flowery crown, but beneath the pale blue petals, the thorns lay hidden. He felt them clawing at his skin, sharp and cruel, saw the slow trickle of blood run down his fingers and woke, trembling in the dark. Promise me, Ned, his sister had whispered from her bed of blood. She loved the scent of winter roses. You see, so it's saying here that the crown was of winter roses, right? And it's saying here she had loved the scent of winter roses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think. I don't know if I'm looking too much into it, but I feel like that is sort of leading to it, that, you know, she kind of went willingly.
That it was more of a consensual, like, elopement.
Yeah. That's what I think, anyway. I don't know if I'm reaching.
Because, like, you know, with Ned remembering that she was in a bed of blood, saying, promise me, like, a bed of blood, you know, with a woman, that's very telling in this sort of atmosphere that, you know, she died giving birth or, like, because mm-hmm. of some sort of complications with labor.
Yeah.
So if that is how, like, is Ned the only one that knows that she was found in that sort of birthing bed situation and just told everyone else that he just found her dead?
I mean, if we are going by what the TV show says. It, obviously, the people, you know, Sir Arthur Dayne and whoever else that was down there, they knew what was going on up there.
But they died,
right? I think there was a person that was helping her deliver the baby at the top of the tower, but I don't know.
Yeah, so I'm just curious about that in terms of how widely is it known? Like, is the official story that, you know, that Lyanna was raped and she got pregnant and then she died in childbirth and that baby died due to complications? Like, how much of that element, or is it just like, oh, I just found her dead? Like, how much of that element is known to wider society or beyond the Starks?
I think it's just I found her dead.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that was anything to do with the baby. I think
okay.
Just found her dead after being raped, something like that.
Okay. And so after we get that very poignant R plus L equals J bone thrown at us, we get Lord Varys comes in.
Yeah. Giving him wine on an empty stomach, which is wise.
Yeah, that's really smart. Like, honestly, I'm wondering if Varys is trying to, like, sort of get him drunk enough in his fatigue state to, like, do the smart thing.
I mean, you know, that is a good... that is a good thing. That is a good plan.
It is, and... You wrong me, Varys said sadly. Truly, no one loves a eunuch. Give me the skin. And he shows that it's not poisoned.
Yeah.
And all men must swallow the sour with the sweet high lords and eunuchs alike. Your hour has come, my lord.
Yeah, and then, you know, Varys tells him... You know, I trust you to realize that you are a dead man.
Mm-hmm.
Varys knows. It's just like, it doesn't matter. I don't think he believes, he truly believes that, you know, if Cersei comes in and Ned does, you know, says that he's a traitor and whatever, he's still going to be a dead man, regardless.
Eventually, like,
yeah.
Well, again, it's the whole thing, because Varys, as we mentioned, like, you know, his whole deal is, you know, Cersei would love, just on general principle, love to see you dead. You know her secret, and that makes you a threat. But she's got other things to worry about. And so with you in the cell, or you dead, she has to deal. Tywin is out, you know, battling your son and the Tullys and everything in the north and River Run, leaving her completely vulnerable to Stannis and Renly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know... Varys is, you know, making the argument that at the very least she'll keep you alive until she feels secure enough with Stannis and Renly before, like, feeling she is before feeling confident enough to turn her attention back onto onto Starks and Tullys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another thing that I found it really interesting is this bit here that, you know, Varys tells Ned, because Ned asks him, you know, what ends are those, Lord Varys? You know, what do you want out of this whole situation? And he says he wants peace. If there was one soul in King's Landing who was truly desperate to keep Robert Baratheon alive, it was me. For 15 years, I protected him from his enemies, but I could not protect him from his friends. What strange fit of madness led you to tell the queen that you had learned the truth of Joffrey's birth? And Ned says, the madness of mercy. And then Varys says, you know, it wasn't a boar that had killed Robert. It wasn't the wine, the poisoned wine. It was your mercy. Because, you know, if he didn't tell Cersei what he knew about her, she wouldn't have poisoned Robert at that time.
But hadn't she already, like, given... Hadn't they already gone out hunting? Wasn't that already set in motion even before Ned and she had the talk? Because I interpreted it as she's so candid and blunt with Ned because she knows the plan is already in place and knows that Robert is going to die soon. Not so much she was reacting to Ned figuring out the truth and then, you know...
Yeah.
That or is because true, Ned was totally lacking in subtlety in his investigation, that even though before he confronted her, she already knew that he basically had put it together. That's possible.
That is true, but you know, what Varys is insinuating here is that, you know, it wasn't all of that killed Robert. It was the fact that, you know, and that talk that they had made her act faster. He says, you know, she wouldn't have waited long in any case, but that just made her move faster.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't know what came first and whatnot, but yeah.
And then, yeah, he goes on to explain of why Cersei's so frightened of him, because she can't deal with the Starks and the Baratheons at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, in that way, the best solution that Varys can come up with is, you know, confess your crimes and, you know, take the Black with your bastard son, and so that the Tullys and the Starks will lay down their arms, and then they can deal with Stannis. And he's like, do you think my life is worth, you know, so little to me, or that I care so much about my life? And she's like, and Varys is just like, but what about your daughter's life?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's like, you know, Sansa is only a child. You know, and he's saying, you know, Rhaenys was a child, Prince Rhaegar's daughter, a precious little thing, younger than your girls. She had a small black kitten she called Balerion, did you know? I always wondered what happened to him. Rhaenys liked to pretend he was the true Balerion, the black dread of old, but I imagine the Lannisters taught her the difference between a kitten and a dragon quick enough the day they broke down her door. It's just basically saying, you know, they didn't show mercy to a little girl, they won't show mercy to your little girl.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, you know, again, Varys is, you know, because earlier Ned asked, can you get me out of here? And he's like, I could, but am I? No.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not doing that because it's going to come back on me and I don't want that to
happen. Well, I'm wondering if even that's true. Like, I don't know. I have a very high confidence in, even if, I think I sort of interpreted it as Varys is not going to set him free. Not so much that he fears it'll come back to him. I have confidence enough in his skills for it not to be traced back to him. I think he's not doing it because he doesn't trust Ned not to do stupid shit if he were to be set free.
That is true. Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense.
I always interpret it from like that angle. And so, yeah, so we've got, you know, this makes me think of, you know, in Rambling Raven Puffs, I have compared a little bit of Ned with Arthur Weasley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the sense of, you know, because we're reading Order of the Phoenix and we've gotten to the point where now Percy is estranged from the Weasley family. And I sort of read it as, you know, with Arthur, you know, you can, you know, his sort of situation is that it's sort of interpreted as because he loves Muggles so much and quote unquote lacks wizarding pride, that has held him back in his career, you know, and therefore why he hasn't advanced and hasn't, you know, been able to gain more financial security and blah blah blah. So there's the balance of what is, you know, a lot of us think it's noble that Arthur Weasley has sticked to his convictions, you know, mm-hmm. and not changed, you know, just for material gain and things like that. But by not quote unquote playing the game a little bit better in the ministry's bureaucracy, that his family has suffered substantially in a financial way. And is that noble? Like, in the same with Ned Stark, like, Ned is so stubborn for his honor, but that also has now hurt his family.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree with what you're saying. Well, for Ned, it has worked so far, you know, mm-hmm. until now, because he wasn't surrounded by enemies. But I think that Arthur, that's the thing with Harry Potter as well, because it's very black and white in the wizarding world. In Harry
Potter,
it
is more so black and white.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Whilst, you know, in A Song of Ice and Fire, everything has like grey. You know, so Arthur, it wouldn't have made him a likable character.
Yeah,
if he was just like a grey middle, you know, where he was doing enough to for his family to be able to have a good life.
Mm-hmm.
Should he have done that? Yes, absolutely. You know, I think we all play a game in our lives just to be able to survive every day, right? Because if we all just wanted to, you know, stick to our principles,
mm-hmm.
then things would be way different. Like, you know, I like my job, but I wouldn't be doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you definitely wouldn't. you know, we would open our bookshop and tell people to fuck off if they didn't want. Yeah, you know, we do things, you know, we all have our honor
mm-hmm.
In our principles, but we also know that, you know, to live in the society that we live, we do need to play
mm-hmm.
that game.
This is true. Although with Arthur, I don't know, I kind of sort of interpreted that Arthur could have played the game just a little bit with and not be just a, like, not become a Lucius Malfoy or act like one.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, just not be so in your face about, like, his proclivity towards Muggle stuff. But anyway, yeah. This is not rambling Raven Bubs.
No, but it's something that we can definitely look into if to do, like, scholarly Slytherclaws.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that would be a good topic to talk about.
Okay. Alrighty then. And so, yeah, the chapter ends with Varys, you know, saying, "The choice, my dear Lord Hand, is entirely yours. That, you know, you could, you know, you can have next visitor who calls on you could bring you bread and cheese and the milk of the poppy for your pain, or he could bring you Sansa's head."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's basically saying, you know, you either die, you and your kids die,
mm-hmm.
or you say this and you go to live on the wall. It, you know, there are worse things that might have happened.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then, and now we move on to Catelyn. Catelyn, who again, I, you know, once Catelyn, and excluding the Tyrion thing, once Catelyn is out of the North and is, like, back in her own territory, like, in the sort of Tully, you know, mm-hmm. what's in the dominion of the Tully family and River Run, she becomes a normal human being again.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing. She knows what she's doing. And do you think that all of this, you know, the negotiating and... like, you know, things to do with war. Do you think she learned that from her father? Do you think she learned that from Ned?
If anything, I think both, of course. But I think a lot of it comes from her father. Because I think, like Frey is a very poignant example. Because Frey controls that bridge. Mm-hmm. And so he's very pivotal. But just in general, the Riverlands being the sort of, you know... caught in between the South and the North, so any conflict between the North and the South is going to involve them whether they want it to or not.
Yeah.
And so from that, just that geopolitical reality of River mm-hmm. Run, like, they constantly have had to negotiate and, like, with who gets to cross, like, with the phrase who gets to cross and who doesn't, or, like, more generally with the Tullys, who do they make alliances with, who they don't, to protect themselves, to make sure that, you know, when the North and South are killing each other, that they're not completely decimated in the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think a lot of it comes from, you know, I want, you know, I'm very influenced in that opinion by, there's a YouTube channel called The Take, and they do, like, they have a series where they do the symbolism of each major Game of Thrones, like, house.
Cool.
And one of them is the Tullys, and, you know, just by the sheer nature of the Tully sigil being a fish, is mm-hmm. a fish, like water, can maneuver, you know, and, like, and be sneaky and, you know, get into, wiggle into places in the way that Starks or lions are just not used to. They just want to, you know, clash head.
Yeah, yeah, that's really cool. I like that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I think a lot of it comes from just her her background as a Tully and looking what how her father and the Blackfish dealt with things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're basically marching. They're at Frey's front door.
Yeah.
And Frey is this guy who's got control of this bridge to cross this one river. And it's not physically impossible for them to accomplish what they need to with... you know, without Frey, but they just don't have enough time. Like, they don't have mm-hmm. enough time to maneuver around the terrain without Frey's help because Tywin is on their ass.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as he heard that they're coming down, he's going up. So they're going to meet somewhere in the middle at some point. But, mm-hmm. yeah, they don't have time. You know, Rob is just really desperate to get across. And he's like, yes. You know, I could make rafts for us to go through. The horses could go across, but without, you know, mounted people in chainmail. Mm-hmm. So he's like, yeah, that's the only option, and he's just getting really annoyed.
Really annoyed at the reality that clearly Frey has never been the most loyal Bannerman to Hoster Tully.
Mm-hmm.
And just his general demeanor, I don't think he ever would be, but there's also the added complication is that there is a Frey, you know, Tywin's sister is married to a Frey.
Yeah.
Which I really wish that, you know, that Lannister lady had been in the TV show, because I liked her in Feast of Crows.
It also makes more sense, you know, when all of that comes to a head in a few books' time, you know, why he took the decision that he did, you know, mm-hmm. why he would align himself to Lannisters.
Yeah, so we've got Frey, and Rob is just like, I need to cross the river. And then, and Catelyn's just like, you know, they've been holding this river for 600 years and they've never failed to extract their toll.
Mm-hmm.
And Rob is like, what do they want? You know, what is their toll? And it's like, that's what we need to find out.
Interesting. But she did kind of hint at it, I think, a little bit earlier, because she did say, you know, Lord Walder has sired a great many children over the years and they must needs marry someone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Yep. And so, you know, they go down and, you know, present themselves. And I think Catelyn, again, in a stroke of genius, she is smart to balance, like, the formality of I'm important enough where, like, Lord Frey can't, like, send me away or can't outwardly say that meeting with me isn't good enough.
Yeah.
But it's also a sense of, you know, don't let Robin go in there completely by himself, who doesn't know what a piece of shit this guy is.
Yeah. Yeah. She was really clever. Wow. What a compliment from me.
Yes. So, yeah, because, you know, she's
totally in her element. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah. And she knows Walder Frey is a complete sack of shit. And I'm just wondering, you know, it's decided that she's going to go in there, and she does, and enters the Great Hall. And, oh, where was I going with this? Well, I guess I think, you know, Walder Frey is this, not that he isn't a shitty human being, and I'm not saying, like, even this would justify his shitty behavior, but I'm starting to think, like, I'm literally trying to see it from Frey's perspective, is that basically no one, if it's peacetime, like, no one gives a shit about him and no one thinks he's very mm-hmm. important. Like, the only people who ever give a shit about him is when these sort of situations happen and they need crossing to the river, and that's the only time in which he can negotiate shit for himself. And so is it unreasonable that he has all this resentment because no one treats him with any respect until they need to cross the river?
Yeah, no, not at all. I completely understand where you know, he's so fed up of being treated like shit and just being used for the purpose of crossing. So mm-hmm. he is, and he's right that, like, you know, if people are going to cross and only care about him when shit goes down, then he should ask for a price.
Mm-hmm.
He should, you know, pay the troll toll. I think yep. it is.
And I just think it's so hilarious that Walder Frey and Argus Filch are played by the same actor, because it's the exact same,
the same people
down to his makeup.
Yeah, I mean, and clothes as well.
And clothes, like everything. The only thing lacking with Frey is he doesn't have a Mrs. Norris sitting in his lap.
But he does have young children as his wife.
Oh, that's so gross.
Nasty.
She's like, it's a great pleasure to see you again after so many years, my lord, Catelyn said. The old man squinted at her suspiciously. Is it? I doubt that. Spare me your sweet words, Lady Catelyn. I am too old. Why are you here? Is your boy too proud to come before me himself? What am I to do with you? Again, like, he couldn't out in front of everyone say that Catelyn isn't good enough to talk to. But, yeah. You know, especially as the daughter of his official lord of Riverrun, Lord Tully, you know, but still, you know, yeah. But when they're in the castle and he face to face with her, he just throws that in her face.
Yeah. But then his sons remind him that, you know, he did ask her to be there. And he's like, don't tell me what I'm supposed to be doing.
I've had 3 kings to guest in my life and queens. Do you think I require lessons from the likes of you, Rhaegar?
so funny sometimes, honestly.
Yeah, like the typical old crotchety man. And it's, you know, sometimes it's the question of, is this person just become old and therefore they don't give a shit anymore? But I have the feeling that Frey was always this sack of shit, always.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think him being old, you know, has granted him any further license. I think even when he was young, he was behaving this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And to be honest, it starts getting to you when your worth is only measured by in times of war when people want to get past.
Yeah. And like, I'm wondering in terms of, again, you know, the running joke is that they have so many children. He has so many children. He has so many sons, has so many grandsons. And I'm like, is that just him being a shitty, lecherous person where he marries so much and they die in childbirth and he keeps marrying and keeps having children? Yeah. Or is that just, you know, his normal shittiness? Or is that legitimately a strategy to have plenty of bodies to marry off and make alliances with people?
That is a good idea because, you know, Catelyn does say he must marry, you know, his children must marry. Mm-hmm. So it is, I guess he is trying to, you know, get to the top houses. Mm-hmm. I can't like speak anymore this week. So it's a struggle.
It's Friday, but, yeah, after a really long day.
Yeah, he's trying to marry into the higher houses, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so,
yeah, Catelyn does call him out, doesn't she? She's like, you know, where am I? Have expected you to find you, my lord. You are still my father's bannerman, are you not? And then he's like, you know, I would have come down, yes. You know, I would have gone into battle. I was waiting, you know.
To assemble, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, tell her, Jarrett. He asked his son, like, tell her that it was my intent. But he's like, is it my fault that your full brother lost his battle before he could march?
Yeah, so, and also, you know, Catelyn tries to throw it in his face. Like, if you look outside, like, we have 20,000 men who could storm this castle, and Frey just throws it back. Again, they'll all be 20,000 corpses by the time Tywin Lannister gets here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he knows
it's impossible
to get through without him.
Yeah, so he knows what the bottom line is. And so for as grumpy and crotchety as he is, it's like we have all the worst elements of being an old grumpy man and none of the like benefit of him not losing any of his lucidity.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. He's very aware of everything that's going on.
Yep. And so, yeah, Lord. And it's like, you know, if I had the sense of the gods gave a fish, I'd help the Lannisters boil you all. Why don't you? Lord, mm-hmm. Walder snorted with disdain. Lord Tywin, the proud and splendid, warden of the West, hand of the king. Oh, what a great man that one is, and his gold and this, and his gold that, and his lions here, and his lions there. I'll wager you he eats too many beans. He breaks wind just like me, but you'll never hear him admit it. Oh no, when he's got to be so puffed up about it anyway. So if anything, Frey's resentment works to Catelyn's and Rob's advantage is that he's so proud and so resentful that he's not immediately willing to be so sycophantic towards the Lannisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even when one of his own brothers is married to is Tywin's brother-in-law.
So
ultimately, you know, he uses Catelyn as a stand-in to bitch about everyone, to bitch about her father, to bitch about everyone again who doesn't give me respect because, you know, and no one cares about me unless they have to cross, blah, blah, blah. So once we get all of this, once he gets that out of his system, we get an interesting piece of information that Catelyn is thrown off guard by because he ends up letting it slip that it was Jon Arryn's intention to have his little son, Robert, be fostered with Stannis at Dragonstone and not with Tywin.
Yeah. And this came up before, didn't it?
This came up before with Ned, wasn't Robert telling Ned this in the King's Road?
No, so he was telling him that back in the crypts at Winterfell, when, you know, he was telling you that Robert the Child could go and be a ward in Winterfell, and then, yeah, and then Robert tells him, no, he's going to go to...
He's going to go
to Casterly Rock. And then I remember this because I laughed. Ned said, you know, that he would rather give like one of his sons to as a pit of snakes or something than give it to Tywin Lannister. Mm-hmm. And then it also came up when Ned was, you know, rummaging around trying to find what is going on. That came up again, because someone told him that the kid was supposed to be a ward in Dragonstone. And he was like, no, he was supposed to be in Casterly Rock. And it's like, no. So he told Catelyn that before, when they were in Winterfell. So that's how Catelyn thinks that, you know, he's the kid's supposed to be in Casterly Rock.
Yeah. So I don't know if... Like, a lot of fans hone in on this as this may be important later.
Mm.
But, yeah, it's just interesting. I don't think this has come full circle, even with the revelation of Lysa being a piece of shit and everything.
Yeah, no, I think it's to say that something was going on behind the scenes that Robert wasn't aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And so finally, you know, they reached a point where, you know, and Catelyn, you know, the book just says, after that, it was just haggling.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and she says, you know, can I cross the river? And he was like, you say you want to cross the river. And she says, we do. And he says, well, you can't. Unless I allow it, and why should I? The Tullys and the Starks have never been friends of mine. And then he's just like, cross his arms, smirks. So then she starts negotiating with him, which we don't see here.
But we get it when she returns to Rob and says, you know, you've got to foster two of his grandsons at Winterfell. Mm-hmm. You got to have one of his sons or grandsons be your squire. Mm-hmm. Arya's got to marry one of his sons if she's found. And you've got to marry one of his daughters. And Frey is even being kind and letting you pick which daughter you want.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's great, isn't it?
Which, in the grand scheme of things for this situation, that is actually kind of nice.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and...
Not nice for the girl, because she doesn't have a choice, but it's
yeah,
nice.
But with, and Rob's like, is there any other choice? Not if you want to cross, and Rob is just like, okay, I'll do it. And it's that makes Catelyn realize that, okay, my son has grown up, because he didn't, like, you know... make any emotional outburst or whatever, but that he just accepts this.
Yeah, he's like, he knows what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm. And then they crossed at Evenfall as the Horned Moon floated up upon the river.
Yeah. What is interesting here as well is that Katniss said it would be good to leave some, you know, he's going to give us most of his army. He's going to hold back 400. To protect the castle, I think we should leave 400 of our men there to help
protect the castle.
Yeah, and to, you know, and you should put someone that you trust in there, so, you know, nothing is left to Walder Frey. And he leaves Bruce Bolton there.
Boo.
Yeah.
Yucky. Mm-hmm. Yep. For good or ill, her son had thrown the dice. And thus concludes the chapter of Catelyn with the Freys. Although, I didn't mention, but Frey also brings up the point of, you know, you swore fealty to my father, you should already be, this shouldn't be a question, we shouldn't even have to have this conversation. And yeah. Frey just throws it in her face of, I swore also fealty to the crown. Why should that pledge of allegiance matter any matter less? Like, shouldn't my allegiance to the crown supersede Hoster Tully?
Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah.
So again, he's a shitty human being, but I also would you know, hate to be in his position where the thing he has is valuable, but only valuable at very certain times. It's not like the Lannister gold, where gold is always valuable no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Alrighty then. And then we can move on to our history lessons. Which I guess I should rephrase it to history lesson, because Nat has been totally swamped and could not come up with one, but that's okay because I've got plenty.
I'm sorry. It's been hectic. I'm hoping that in the next month I'll be, everything will be calmer. But right now it's just so hectic. I haven't had much time for anything. But I do love history lessons. Yep,
so my history lesson comes from, again, this marriage alliance that has to be made with Rob and one of the Frey daughters. So just, I pulled up an article. It's called The Tudor Times, which I guess it's all about stuff during, the medieval, early modern period. And so the article is European Marital Alliances, Chapter 1, the 1460s to the 1490s. The alliance formed by England and the Kingdom of Aragon and Castile by the betrothal of Catherine of Aragon to Arthur, Prince of Wales in 1489 was one of a series of marital alliances across Europe. It has been the case for hundreds of years that marriage of royalty was part of the diplomatic process. Such marriages were supposed to promote peace and understanding between the countries of the respective bride and groom. Unfortunately, for many women who left their homes and families, the result was that their loyalties were divided as their husbands and sons became involved in conflicts with their country of origin. It is helpful when considering any alliance or wars to look at family relationships involved. And so we've got on October 19th, 1469, Isabella, half-sister of Enrique Henry IV of Castile, married Ferdinand, heir to the throne of the neighboring kingdom of Aragon. Isabella, as part of an agreement with Enrique in which he recognized her as his heiress, had promised to ask his consent before marrying. Her decision not to, presumably because she knew he would have forbidden the match, led him to withdrawing his recognition of her as his heir. When Enrique died in 1474, Castile was plunged into civil war between the supporters of Isabella and Juana La Beltraneja, who was the daughter of Enrique's wife, but also certainly not of the king himself. Ferdinand and Isabella were second cousins, as well as having a number of other blood relationships. Their mutual ancestors were Juan I, King of Castile, and his wife, Eleanor of Aragon. Juan and Leonora's sons became kings of Castile and Aragon. Thus, a papal dispensation was needed, which was granted, although not until the couple had already taken their vows. So yeah, there's one instance where an alliance fell apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the 1470s, 1477, Maximilian, Archduke of Austria, and the King of the Romans married Mary, Duchess of Burgundy. Maximilian was the son of Emperor Frederick III, the first from the Habsburg family to be elected as emperor. Maximilian's mother was Eleanor of Portugal, who was the paternal first cousin of Ferdinand of Aragon. Maximilian married Mary in 1477, shortly after the death of her father, Charles the Bold, Duke of Burgundy. France was trying to reclaim Mary's territory on the basis that those parts of the duchy which were subject to the crown of France could not be inherited by a woman. While a part of the duchy had to be ceded to the French crown, Mary and Maximilian retained a significant proportion of it. Mary died in 1482 after a fall from a horse.
Oh, no.
Yep. And then in the 1480s, 1486, Henry VII of England married Elizabeth of York, daughter of Edward IV of England. The purpose was to bring together the warring branches of the English royal houses, the Lannisters, the Lannisters and the Yorks. They're so similar. The names are so similar.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, because this Elizabeth of York, that she was the older sister of the princes in the Tower who got killed by Richard III.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, Henry VII of England is supposed to be the historical counterpart of Daenerys Targaryen. So if J.R.R. Martin wants Game of Thrones to follow real history to a certain degree, Dany is supposed to win.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting. We'll see.
But anyway, so, yep. And then we've also got, in the 1490s, there were serial marriages that took place. In 1490, the infant Tada Isabella, daughter Ferdinand Isabella, married Alfonso, Prince of Portugal. The alliance between Castile and Portugal was essential to the security of Spain, naturally, because they're kind of neighbors on the Iberian Peninsula.
Yeah.
The royal house had intermarried a number of times already, and this Isabella's grandmother had been a princess of Portugal. Alfonso died in 1491, and Isabella, after a period of intense mourning, was married to Manuel, the next Portuguese heir. Both Isabella's husbands were first cousins to her mother, so that made them her first cousins once removed.
Second cousins, right?
No, that's the thing. I used to confuse it as well. Like, when you're first cousins, you share the same grandparents. When you're second cousins, you share the same great-grandparents. So, like, Sirius Black's first cousin is Andromeda Black. So Tonks, Nymphadora Tonks, is Sirius Black's first cousin once removed, because it's another generation down.
I used to mix
it up as well. Like, so many times I have a relative who I called my second cousin, but actually technically, and she's closer to my age, but technically she's my first cousin once removed.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I like it. Thank you.
Yep. And so that is just a whole bunch of marriages that did or did not pan out because, you know, I guess I'm not so much shocked that, oh, how could this happen? You know, because, you know, they didn't care. Women were just chattel to give babies and things like that. I guess I'm just more surprised that in the context of it being accepted that marriage was a means of political or other forms of alliance, regardless on what scale it was, that so much of this, like, this propaganda about, oh, of course I have to marry, I have to love my husband and everything, like, in the context of this is all very political and unromantic, so why are we even trying to perpetuate this myth?
Yeah, I was wondering, when do you think that, you know, marrying for alliances stopped, and when, like, alliances for, I guess, military power and goods, like exchange of goods, started?
I don't know. Like, the biggest thing is all these marriage alliances, and because that's tied to purity culture, is like the only time for that to have subsided is when, you know, when power is inherited by a son, when it's hereditary, then those alliances will always, you know, have to be there, and purity culture for women will always be there, because literally the whole system is, you know, my son, my real legitimate son is supposed to inherit everything. And so if that child is not my son, everything collapses. So the only way to get, you know, the only way to get away from that sort of, that level of marriage alliance, like, power has to not be hereditary.
Yeah. Wow. Great lesson. I like hearing about marriages.
Yeah.
Across, like, countries.
Yeah. Like, and I'll save for later, like, the actual real life equivalent of when Rob screws up and marries someone else, and that triggers, like, that has its own story, but we'll get to that one later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I can't wait for that to happen.
Alrighty then. And then we have, of course, our friendship lessons. What was yours?
So mine is from Catelyn. Oh, shock and horror. But and it's not media. Something that she and it's not something like that she has done. It's like the opposite, which I usually choose because it's like she's so dumb. But this time I took it from when she took Rob's place going to talk to Alderfrey. And mine is know when you are at an advantage and help your friends.
Of course.
So she knows this guy from, you know, being around her dad, witnessing what Walder Frey is doing, what Walder Frey has done, even. And she knows that, like, if she goes in there, she knows how to talk to him. And she knows that that will help Rob out. So she puts herself forward to help him out. independent if he's her kid or not, but like, mm-hmm. I think that she would have done that for an ally. Anyway.
Yeah, I think so too. Yes. Yeah. Great lesson. Again, alert the media. We gotta do this with Kat.
I know, right? Wow.
Yes.
Those are rare. Yeah, take a shot.
The history lesson wasn't hard for me to come up with, but I was pondering a little this morning, like trying to come up with a friendship lesson. And ironically, mm-hmm. mine comes from Barristan Selmy, of all people.
Okay. All right.
Because, yeah, I just really honed in on, you know, the shitty way he was treated. And I kind of took it as, it's less, if anything, it's less of a friendship lesson and more of a, like, self-respect lesson,
mm-hmm.
you know, in terms of, like, don't take a shitty deal, even from people who, quote-unquote, claim to be your friends.
Yes, yes. How many times do we get tricked into that?
Yeah, like, we get tricked into doing things because we think certain people have our best interest at heart mm-hmm. and don't have ulterior motives. Yeah. And, you know, I feel like in modern times, it's more easy to, you know, compartmentalize, you know, these are my coworkers, or this is my boss, this is not my friend, like, this isn't my mm-hmm. normal social circle. Whereas in this sort of medieval context, like, your friendships and your loyalties, like, you died to defend your king, mm-hmm. you know, which is a political relationship, but clearly a personal one, because you're giving up all lands and titles and everything's all enmeshed in crazy yeah. incestuous stuff, especially with the Lannisters.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't take a shitty deal, even from people who maybe came off as being friendly, and just be like, no, fuck that shit.
I like it. I like it. Have some self-respect, people.
Yes.
Know your worth.
Indeed. Always know your worth. Something I have to keep telling myself over and over again these mm-hmm. last few weeks.
Yes.
Alrighty then. And thus concludes this episode of Podcasters Lending. Tune in next time. And who do we have next? Got my little list here. It should be John, Daenerys, and Tyrion.
Ooh.
Sweet. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Podcaster's Landing. The music to our intro is copyrighted by Persian-German composer Ramin Djawadi. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophia Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media. Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMare Studios. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.